Hello everyone and welcome to the podcast. My name is Caroline and I'm the founder of the business community Bay Talk, where we connect and promote local business in Sydney's inner west. Thanks to my son Richard for producing the intro music. In today's podcast, I am joined by Elisa Grant, Creative Account Director at Scooter. Scooter is a local supplier of branded merchandise, corporate gifts and uniforms. In today's podcast, we discuss what a promotional product is and how to fit it into the marketing mix. Why should you use a promotional product and what types of products should you brand? Finally, Elisa shares the benefits of working with Scooter and some of her favourite products. Hi Elisa, thanks Hi. For coming on today.
Thank you very much for your time.
So Elisa, what is a promotional product?
Well, basically it's anything that can be branded with a logo or a message of some kind. So anything from a low-cost gimmicky item like a pen or an anti-stress ball through to uniforms, printed material, signage, banners, all of that sort of stuff. So it's basically a tangible item that remains a consistent brand reminder.
Okay, and so how can you fit your promotional products? How do you fit them into your marketing mix?
Well, a comprehensive marketing program would have above-the-line advertising and below-the-line. So above-the-line is media, radio, that sort of thing, and it's targeted at a mass audience, so general population, whereas below-the-line activities, so trade shows, events, social media, promotional products, direct mail campaigns, they're a little bit more targeted to a particular demographic. So it's how you can connect with a particular pool of customers. And it's a little bit more direct than above the line.
I didn't know. So above the line radio, you're getting a wider range of people. Yep. Below the line, you're targeting more, and that's where you...
That's where promotional products come in. So it's like, I guess, pinpoint marketing where you can go, this is the demographic, this is who I want to attract, and I'm going to give products to that particular market. So that's where the promotional products fit in. And when you're a small business or, you know, during COVID where we don't have a lot of money as a general rule in most industries, then you can say, okay, well, I don't have unlimited resources to advertise on, you know, TV or on media, so I'm going to spend $5,000 on my marketing, but I want it to really have a good return on investment. So one of the best ways to do that is through promotional products.
Great. Okay, that makes there so much go. Sense. Because below the line, targeted, which is why you can get magnets for fridges, which are going to help families, you can get pens, businesses, stickers, kids, different types of markets that you're trying to attract.
Yeah, well,
it's
the type
of product you could use.
How you sell a gym is different to how you sell a law firm or how you sell a real estate agent. And so knowing how the product would work for your demographic is really important too. Mm.
So why then use, you've pretty much said, I guess, but why use a promotional product?
Well, the reason that you would use it is because, let's take research that's been conducted both here and in the US. Both of those particular research projects interviewed large portions of the population, and we discovered really critical information from that, and that is that the majority of people that are given a promotional product will retain an understanding of the brand or the company that's given it to them, and they're more likely to use that company again. So the return customer pool is quite large when you're handing out promotional products. And the other really cool thing is that most of the products that are handed out will be kept for longer than a year. So if you think about the potential for return work, referral work from something that is kept around your house or your car or your office for more than a year, that's a lot of brand reminders, a lot more than a 30-second spiel on a television show, ad on a television show.
There's a certain number of times, isn't there? Is that right, that you see a brand before it use?
When I was at university, it used to be three. In the old days, they'd say you had to see something three times for you to recall the brand that it comes from. Now it's five, and it's edging towards more because we're so inundated with messaging, especially on social media feeds where you're given so much information. It's like, how do you connect? How do you reach your audience? And how do you keep them interested and to remind them consistently of your brand. It's easy for a Nike to do it. It's a bit harder for, you know, a Baytalk or a scooter to do it because our pool is a little bit smaller. So you have to try and cut through the noise. And also in terms of your own staff, having that brand integrity and for people to feel proud of where they work, you know, branded products can be really useful there as well. Mm. Not just in uniforms, but reward and recognition programs. You know, in the old days they'd give awards. Now it's more tangible things, lifestyle products, watches, you know, things that have some sort of durability. And it's like, thank you for being part of the team. And while I give you this, it's also going to have my logo on it, and that's going to give you some connectivity to where it is that you're working. So, yeah.
Gosh, it's a lot in it.
It is a lot in it.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So does anything branded with a logo work? Can you brand anything?
Yeah. Well, the answer to that is yes, you can. But should you? The answer is no. The example that I really like to use is if you give someone a pen and it works twice and then it falls apart, the person receiving that pen's not going to know the factory that made it. They're going to think that pen reflects you and your brand. So it is a damaging thing to give just anything to just anyone. Particularly, and I know this is going to sound a little bit strange, but the Australian marketplace is a lot more discerning than, you know, the UK or the US. New Zealand is like us as well, where I think part of it has to do with population. So the bigger the country, like the US, they can do mass distribution of promotional products and it's considered okay. In Australia, it really isn't. You need to be mindful of what you're giving to someone and they need to feel that it's worthwhile. Some of that has to do with the environment. I have to be up front and say in the last, you know, 10 years, the amount of people asking for environmentally responsible products, that's increasing. So there is some of that in there. But I think just in general, Australians like quality. They rather have something good than have lots of something not great. So that's, you know, if you take, for example, last year, the Coles Little Shopper campaign.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You remember that? Mm-hmm. As successful as that was in some ways, it was really disastrous for their brand in other ways because there were actual campaigns to stop them being able to do that in the future because a lot of people were receiving this plastic junk, as they called it, and they just didn't see any value in it. Now, I have a 7-year-old, so I saw great value in it because she loved them. But somebody that doesn't have any connectivity to that particular product is just going to see it as a waste. And that would not have happened in another demographic, like, for example, the US, or even where I, you know, my background's Italian, that mass distribution pieces happen there all the time and people love them. Not the case here.
Yeah. So I think it was the little plastic bags that they were in as well, not just the actual thing.
The actual thing.
You saw them littered around the place. And so that was...
So I tend to think that less is more. My stance has always been if you've got $500, don't buy 500, you know, don't buy 500 pens. Let's do 250 and make them better. And so be a little bit more thoughtful in who you're giving that product to, because at the end of the day, a promotional product is an investment. It's not just a throwaway. And I think that connection in the old days, maybe that was more so the case. You know, it was just, we'll just give them a pen and they'll be happy. That's just not the way it's interpreted now, in my opinion. And from what I've seen from my customers, you know, some of them have come to me and they're used to being, to giving out really large quantities of promotional products. And I turn them around because I say, you know, let's do less with that money and let's do it better. Let's just do something that people go, wow, and they have some sort of an excited reaction to. That's, I think, more important.
Yeah. So this environmental stuff, that takes me to the next question, which is, how is promotional products industry managing concerns surrounding the environment?
Well, obviously, there's more eco-friendly materials being used, so bamboo, cornstarch, which I think is really cool. So there's more sustainable, renewable, recyclable products being used. But I think the other side of the coin as well is the social awareness. So a lot more people are wanting to know where the product's been made. Has it been made ethically? Are the people that are employed by the factory, are they being given their due worth? Are they, what are the conditions of where they're, so all of that's important as well now, which when, I'll be honest, when I started in the industry, nobody cared about that. They just wanted something that was cheap. And
whereas now you really better care, hadn't you? Because it's a whole reflection on your brand if you haven't.
I don't know if you remember this. It was a while ago, but Nike, funnily enough, they had an issue of, it was probably, I don't know, 15 years ago now. It was a while ago. But some footage came out of obviously very young people, not quite toddlers, but young kids under 10 working on the floor making, along the assembly line for Nike. And that was just horrific for their brand. It took a really long time for them to rebuild. And from their perspective, they weren't aware that that was part of the cycle. And now the big corporations can't go behind that. You need to know. So there are independent third-party testing houses that will step in between the supplier and the factory and make sure that that process is above board. And that's been asked for more and more and more. Which is great. I mean, I think it needs to happen.
Absolutely. So it's not enough to say now, I didn't know, because the question that should come back to you is, why didn't you know?
Why didn't you know?
Yeah, you
should
know.
Yeah, you should.
So with so many options of branded products online, why should one work with a particular promotional products distributor like Scooter?
Ah, well, that's a good question. There are a lot of people, a lot of options available online. You can Google pens and thousands of websites come up. So, yeah, you're right. You don't have to deal with a promotional product supplier, but here are the reasons why you should. Firstly, in picking that promotional company, it should be someone that's part of APPA, which is the Australian Promotional Products Association. It's an industry body that covers our industry in both Australia and New Zealand. And what they do is they provide a level of professionalism that we have to abide by. So we have a code of ethics that we have to follow as distributors, and they basically will step in on behalf of an end user if something was to go wrong. So if you bought from a promotional company that was an APA member and something untoward was to occur, you would have someone that can step in and help you out, which I think is really important to know. And then from our perspective, being part of APA to us means that we get access to industry trade shows. At the moment with COVID, we've got every week there's podcasts and all sorts of interactive materials being sent to us about product development and product understanding. And so that's really important from our perspective. Mm. And it gives us a connection to pretty much anyone in the Australian marketplace in terms of supply channel. So if you were to ask me for something and I didn't know where to go and buy it, I'd be able to go to my industry and they would give me advice on who I can go and purchase from. And at the other end as well, the suppliers, so our suppliers, the people that we buy our caps and our T-shirts and all the rest from, they are part of this association as well. So they are regulated by the same standards. So if they did something untoward, again, there's some recourse there. So that's an important part of it. But I guess the most important part for you as an individual, Caroline, is that if you come to a promotional company, you've got experience, you've got an understanding of the marketplace, where to buy, how to get it in the time frame that you need it. It's also from the perspective of decoration. So your logo, what can you do with it? What are the limitations? Where do we put it on a product? How big can we put it? All that information that you don't necessarily know, and I would hazard a guess that most of my clients wouldn't know the information that they need to produce something. You know, it looks very simple when you look at it on a screen. Oh, there's a pen, you put a logo there, that's it. But it's like, well, no, do you understand that your logo is quite high, so you can't have a pen with a really small print area, and you know, if you're wanting to do something that's really, really colourful, well, that product won't allow for that because it can only be screen printed and you need to do direct digital. So there's all this complications. Like even just decoration, I mean, there's about 12 standard decoration techniques, and the average person would not know the difference between them because it takes a while to understand what those limitations are. So that's why you would come to someone like myself. And as for Scooter in particular, the way we operate is very much customer driven. So we work one-on-one with customers in trying to get an understanding of what it is that they're trying to achieve. So who's the target market? How do you want it to be distributed? How do you want it to be received? Where do you want the product to go? Do you want it to be in their home or in their office? How much do you want to spend? When do you want to do it? There's all these questions that come about, and it's very easy for someone to look at a pen and go, oh, there you go, I want a pen, put a logo on a pen. But that might not be the best way to spend your $500 that you have for marketing this year. If you're a gym, I would hazard a guess that that's probably one of the least interesting things you could do for your brand. So talking to someone like us, that, you know, we've got special agreements with certain suppliers, so we know that we can buy more if we go to this company over this company. And, you know, instead of doing printing, we can do embroidery on something that's a little bit more elegant, and that's going to have a bit more of a better return on investment for your brand. So it's knowing that sort of stuff, and we get really behind that. Not all promotional companies do.
No.
So some of them, you can go to them and say, I want a pen, I want to spend a dollar, and that's what they'll give you. With us, we will question why it is that you're wanting that pen to make sure that that pen's the right thing for you.
You get what you pay for. If you're going to pay for quality, you're going to get quality. If you're going to pay for junk and little advice, well, that's what you're going to get.
Well, yeah, and at the end of the day, the way that I say is everybody is an expert in what they do for a living. I consider myself, after 20 years of being in the game, as an expert at what I do. So come to me for advice when it comes to promotional products. And if you run a gym, I will come to you for advice on how to get more strength in my legs, you know, because that's your area of expertise.
So you're just saying then 20 years.
Yeah. I started when I was really, really young.
You're quite a baby.
I was a baby. I started in daycare.
So in this time that you've been in, can you tell us what's some of your most memorable? That's a hard word.
Memorable.
Memorable products.
Okay. I did, for a good decade, I did a lot of work with the film industry, which for me was a real buzz because I love movies. So I did a lot of work with Universal, Sony, Paramount, 20th Century, Warner Brothers, Roadshow, all the majors, right? And some of them, well, one in particular, Universal, I would say would have taken up, you know, 3/4 of my day for a good portion of that decade. So I did a lot of work with them, which was really great. So things like gift with purchase, so anything that goes on to a DVD. So when you went to Target, for example, and bought a DVD and it had a T-shirt on it, that was probably, you know, one of mine. So they obviously don't exist anymore because people aren't buying DVDs, hence the reason why I don't do as much work with that particular industry anymore. But the other thing we did a lot of is premieres, and one that I really loved was the Knocked Up premiere, which is a movie that came out about a decade ago. Oh God, I'm aging myself. But we did this really cool birth certificate as the invitation. So the invitation to the premiere was a birth certificate when the event was going to be on. And to get into the premiere, you had to wear a little hospital tag, you know, those little things that you put around your wrist when you go to a hospital. So that was the ticket to get in, which I thought was really cool. Yeah, so limited really budget, but we did something really, really cool for that event. Another one that I did, which was Talladega Nights, which is a Will Ferrell movie. The invitation was printed on a stubby cooler, an open stubby cooler with Velcro. And to get into the event, you had to wear it around your wrist and like kind of walk down fist pumping. You'd walk down the, and then at the end of the red carpet, it got transferred into a nice beer for you, a nice cool beer.
So you came up with these little ideas and concepts. And
well, in that particular game, so in with regards to premieres in particular, there were certain customers who are now still my friends. They're probably going to be listening to this going, oh, she did that with me. they would essentially be tasked with, you know, take Will Ferrell. He's coming to Australia. He's going to need to go on, you know, every major television station. He's going to need to do radio. He's going to have hotels and dinners and parties organised. The premiere and the $5,000 that I'm going to spend on merchandise, in the grand scheme of things, isn't that important. So I would be handballed a lot of the time. They would say, this is the IMDb link for the movie. Watch the trailer. tell me how to use $5,000. And I would come back to them with the ideas, because in the big picture, it wasn't a big deal. But for me, that was the most fun.
Oh, that's huge.
You know, there was another one that was really, really cool, which was the Deuce Bigelow European Gigolo premiere. A friend of mine who owns Blue Haven Pools and Spas, he was attending Sexpo with their spas. And I said to my client at the time at Universal, you should go to Sexpo with Deuce Bigelow. And she looked at me like I was an idiot. But she ended up going, and we did as the promo product a key ring that had a condom inside. So you break the key ring to get your emergency condom. So that was really appropriate. And again, it was not a big budget and we didn't do a lot of them, but they were like really well timed for that particular event. But then there have been some that I've done. I mean, I did a massive blow up inflatable ball that had Shaggy's head on it for a music festival. It was one. So one unit. Then
people just passed it around.
People just passed it around. They videoed it, and it became, you know, part of the promo for the following year's music festival. So, you know, that was a singular item. Then there, at the other extreme, for Herbalife, I created a complete sport apparel range. So everything, you know, singlets, shorts, pants, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. And it took about 9 months of development for this particular range. So You can do something quite small and it can be quite massive, but I like the creative side of it, which is probably why I work really well with Scooter, because they agree in trying to be creative in what.
So they let you bring that part of yourself out. You're not stuck into a box. You can be.
And some people will come to you and say, you know, quite up front, I want a coffee mug. That's fine. I'll give you a coffee mug, and that's obviously what I'm here for. But if people allow me to be a little bit creative.
Well, that is the next thing. Do people often ask for something different?
Yeah, they do. But it's funny, you can be different without breaking the mold. You don't have to necessarily create something from scratch completely for it to be effective. And in fact, if you do create something from scratch, chances are it's going to cost you a lot of money. So I mean you can have a stubby cooler that becomes a really cool entry into a movie premiere with, you know, Hollywood stars. So it doesn't have to be something totally outside of the norm. But I think if you get something like a polo shirt and you put the logo in a position that's not standard, then that can be exciting enough, you know, different enough. Yeah. So if you put,
because normally it's
front chest. So you know, say you did it just above the hip, along the bottom of a shirt, that's kind of a bit cool. Back yoke is really popular as well. Sleeves. So you can do, or instead of having your full logo, you could just have, I mean, obviously Nike can get away with the tick, but you could do, some sort of a slogan that your customers are going to recognise. So put that, quite dominant, and then have your logo somewhere small, and that could be impactful. So you're not creating a new wheel, because it's still a polo shirt, but you're doing something a little bit different on that item that makes it interesting.
Yeah, that's and very, yeah, like you say, it's, you're not having to reinvent the wheel.
Just
change it up a bit.
Change it up.
So promotional products are often used at trade shows and events.
Mm.
In a post-COVID world, when these are possible again, how are they best used at these events?
Well, my first thing, my major takeaway would be you got to make sure that the product that you're giving is relevant, first of all, and they need to be earned. A lot of people at trade shows will just have their staff up the front with a table handing out a whole bunch of free things, and they think that that's going to have some sort of a positive reaction for their brand. That's not the case.
Okay.
In order to qualify, for want of a better word, people should be encouraged to fill out a survey, give you their business card, talk to you, watch a presentation, do something interactive that then earns them, for want of a better word, that promotional product.
So can I just say then, so then back earlier you said that have less of that $500, less things rather than trying to buy a whole lot. Rather than just handing out stickers or something that's just ending up.
It depends, obviously, the way a council you know, would advertise is different because their end users is the mass public, you know. So it's a different sort of entity. But for you, you know, for your someone that has a specific type of business, well, first of all, pick your trade show or your event, make it relevant to your demographic. Mm. And then when you're at that event, you know, spend a little bit of time qualifying who comes up to your stand and talk to them a little bit, because for that promotional product to have served its purpose, it needs to have a return on investment. And for that to occur, the people need to come back to you or need to call you after the event. They're not going to do that if they're not interested in what you're selling.
Yeah.
So if you haven't qualified them first, then how do you know that they're interested in what you have to offer?
Mm.
You know, so
I'm actually, just as you're speaking, visualising myself if I was at a trade show or something and someone's spoken to me and then given me something of really good quality that reflected their business, I'm going to hold on to that than a goodie bag and shoved in my face with stuff in that all I'm going to look for, in all honesty, is the lollies.
Yeah.
And then I'm getting rid of the goodie bag.
Well,
something hard. I'm looking for something hard.
Well, this is interesting because we were talking earlier about, you know, mass distribution. I have a customer that's in the tyre business, so one of the largest distributors of tyres. And before they came on board with Scooter, they were giving out mass, very cheap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at my first meeting when I went to see them and they showed me what they had done in previous years, I looked at it and I just went, oh, that's just... you realise that that's just bin lining. Oh, yeah, but we get to give it out to lots of people. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't need lots of people because you're one of the biggest in your industry. You want people to know that you're quality, that you're a brand leader, that you're about excellence. So instead of doing 10,000 rubbishy things for these, you know, auto trade shows, let's do 1,000. Just 1 year, give me the opportunity to do something really good. And then if it works, then we know where to go moving forward. And the return, the feedback that they received was just huge. So that's important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is partnership branding or brand partnership?
Oh, that's interesting because it's relatively new, I guess, and it's when you put your logo or message onto a product that is a retail line item, so a Nike or a Callaway or a Gildan or a Hanes, so a product that has a good retail perception where they've already spent, you know, untold millions in creating a brand awareness. You tacking your brand onto them gives your brand extra leverage. So it gives it.
What sort of brands can do that?
Any brand can do that on products that you're allowed to do it with.
Yeah.
So that's, again, another thing that you would need to use a promotional provider, because if you go and put your logo on something that you've bought on eBay or, you know, that's you're setting yourself up for a lawsuit. So it needs to be certain product lines that are specifically created for the promo industry. And with that I mean that they're created in such a way that permit people like us to brand them. So not everything can be. The amount of times that people will come to me and say, oh, I saw this thing at Officeworks and I'd like to, you know, brand our logo on the back. And it's like, well, that particular substrate won't take to printing, or it's not large enough to fit under a machine. Like, it needs to be created in such a way to permit decoration.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the really big, big brands out there, you know, Ralph Lauren, Nike, Callaway, like I said, those ones there, in particular in the golf world, like, it's massive in the golf world. You know, if you're a golfer and you get given a $2 promotional ball, that ball is going to end up in the bin. You'd be better off doing a smaller run of a really good quality branded ball, and it connects your brand to that quality. It says quality, you know, so that's the reason for partnership.
Okay. Branding. That makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
And what are the costs involved in dealing with a promotional product supplier?
Well, unlike an agency or a creative house, there's no cost for our creativity and our expertise and so forth. That comes part and parcel of the service. So the only cost is in the product itself. So if you're dealing with someone that knows where to buy and effectively, then you're minimising your costs as much as you can. So, and that's important in a COVID world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
budgets are down low.
Mm.
And what are the top items? This is my last question.
Okay.
What are the top items that are always requested?
So they do change slightly from year to year, but the main items would be pens, notebooks, tote bags, anti-stress toys, and probably drinkware, so plastic bottles and coffee mugs, more so now eco cups than ceramic cups, but coffee cups. Mm-hmm. The other things that are quite popular in the Australian marketplace anyways, cooler bags and anything sun-related, so caps, sunscreen, and glasses, things like that, so sun products. Okay. But this year, without a shadow of a doubt, it's hand sanitizer. That's the number one seller. Every single supplier has bought in ridiculous volumes of the stuff, and now it's really well priced because there's so much on the market. All we need to do is find a way to brand toilet paper and we're set.
We all use it.
And a lot of it, apparently. So
Have you got anything else that you'd like to share?
I think
you've covered quite a lot. Mm. I've learned a lot.
It's been brilliant. It's not just branded plastic junk.
I had no idea, actually. There's so much in it. So it's brilliant.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you. See you.